I'm Marianne Williamson.
Jack Canfield.
Sabon Poussomet.
I'm Doreen Virtue.
My name is Dominique Reeves.
Hi, I'm Carolyn Mace.
This is James Van Praagh, and you're listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman.
Keep doing what you're doing, Greg, balancing the negative radio broadcast with positive energy.
Welcome. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX 93.5 FM Community Supported Radio in Laguna Beach, California. Sex, relationships, dream interpretation, personal growth, we talk about it all. We don't tell you what to do or even how to do it. This show is all about you, your strength. We simply offer up opportunities, pathways, and possibilities. But I say this every single week. Happiness takes courage. Love takes courage. And you are the magic. And we just show you who you are.
What if the sun don't rise when it's supposed to? The birds stop flying. When will the air turn thicker than water? If you love me, why am I dying?
What if the sun don't rise when it's supposed to? What if the birds stop flying? When will the air turn thicker than water?
Thicker than water.
If you love me,
drilling all my oil, forgot to get your car to speed. Killing all God's creatures for a jacket you don't need. Making up new poisons just to throw them in the sea. Burning down the jungle so you get your burgers cheap.
What if the rain don't fall when it has to? What if the rain starts drying?
Yeah. Yes, until nature's warning bell. This is not the way to treat this life or death or hell. Nuking everything in sight, trying to keep the peace. Maybe if you keep this up, I'll terminate the lease.
What if the sun don't rise when it's supposed to? What if the birds stop flying?
When
listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX 93.5 FM Community Supported Radio in Laguna Beach, California. You know, there are so many things to talk about, and somehow, some way, I always find something to babble about with you guys every single week. This week is particularly special because this week is about one of my favorite subjects, gratitude. I got to tell you that we spent an entire year working with a bunch of the kids from Laguna Beach High School here in town with a charity called Wisdom Springs and Walking for Water. And today we had our big event, and these young ladies grew exponentially before our eyes. they were absolutely giving and loving and supportive and found a fun and goofy way to do it. And a lot of it is due to the tutelage, the guidance, the mentoring of my co-host here, Susan Huff. Susan, thank you so much for all you do for all those women, those young women and those young men, and how they just showed up spectacularly today.
They were incredible today. They're incredible always, but they were so incredible and so present, and all that work that they put into it all year, and you helping them on the radio to learn how to give voice to what they're putting together was amazing. So I couldn't have done it without you, Greg.
And aside from how much it did for those young ladies, tell them about what Walking for Water is about, please.
Walking for Water is a wonderful youth project that it's all done by teenagers, local teenagers in Laguna Beach, California, and also back east on the East Coast too. But more importantly, we put wells to save indigenous people in West Africa, Kenya, and now it looks like we're going to get to do Nepal too, because women walk up to 6 to 12 hours every day for water.
It is amazing what they do. And when they have water, what they can do. Kids can go to school. Women contribute to the health and well-being of the village in a multitude of ways that they weren't free and available to do otherwise.
Yes, and absolutely. We, for the first time, were able to put a kid through college this past year. And I never thought that would have been able to happen.
Yeah, baby. So congratulations. You did beautiful work.
We did beautiful work.
And speaking of Laguna Beach, we got to get a little update on the fires that we've been having. So we're going to switch over to our afternoon reporter to let you know what's been going on here in town.
Okay, this is KX93.5, and I'm here to give an update on the fire situation. So the Aliso fire is now at 150 acres and 10% containment. Progress is being made as fire crews continue the fight today. Stay tuned for further updates. And here's an update on the evacuation situation. Most Laguna Beach Fire Department evacuation orders for residents in the Top of the World and Old Top of the World areas remain in effect this morning. However, residents on the west or ocean side only of Alta Laguna Boulevard are now allowed to return to their homes. That includes residents living on Burn Drive, Cresta Way, Zell Drive, Dorn Court, Chelan Way, Chateau Way, Bernard Court, Temple Hills Drive, and Burn Court are allowed back in their homes at this time. Evacuations remain in effect for Ridge Drive, Rimcrest Circle, Crestwood Circle, Park Place, the east side of Alta Laguna Boulevard, Tyrol Drive, Mountain View Drive, Bond Drive, Nestall Road, Treetop Lane, Alpine Way, Ann's Lane, Shady Lane, Old Top of the World Drive, Sunset Dumont, and Shady Place. Evacuations remain in effect for these areas due to the potential of fire danger and because fire apparatus might be populating the neighborhoods, preventing the ability to evacuate. Aerial fire crews are currently monitoring flare-ups and heat spots on the fire from the air. Because a thick underbrush is currently smoldering in some areas, ground fire crews need to extinguish those areas from the ground and maintain access to the area. The city wants to sincerely thank all residents affected by the evacuation for their cooperation during this fire emergency. No structures have been lost at this time. The evacuation orders will remain in effect to safeguard our citizens from any harm and will be lifted as soon as possible. Fire crews from the Laguna Beach Fire Department and the Orange County Fire Authority are closely monitoring the fire situation and remain on scene. The Aliso fire started early Saturday afternoon and grew to over 250 acres in size, with 1,500 Laguna Beach residents evacuated. City administrators are monitoring the fire from the city's Emergency Operations Center. The next update will be about 11 a.m. Temporary evacuation shelter, a care and reception center, has been opened at the Susie Q Community Center, which is located at 383rd Street. Information and staff are available at the center for evacuees. It is critical that people in Laguna Beach register to receive emergency alerts. Sign up at www.alertoc.com and for Nixle by texting 92651 to the number 888-777. For ongoing updates, go to www.lagunabeachcity.net or follow on Twitter at Laguna Beach PD on Twitter and Facebook. And then, again, the update on the fire at this point is the Aliso fire is now at 150 acres and 10% containment. Progress is being made as fire crews continue the fight today. Please stay tuned for more updates. This is KX93.5.
You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman, and we were just fortunate enough to have a caller and let us know that that is no longer as dire. The Laguna Beach Police Department and the Laguna Beach Fire Department went out there, and they just went above and beyond and made sure that they took care of the citizens of Laguna Beach. If you want to find out more about them, you could go to Facebook or Twitter and just put in Laguna Beach PD or Laguna Beach Fire Department. And if you want to get the latest updates, not only on the fire, but everything going on in the city, please go to LagunaBeachCity.net. That's LagunaBeachCity.net. We are here with Susan Huff. Susan, welcome back.
Thank you, Greg.
All right. We are going to rush through this a little bit today because we're up against a couple of timelines, and we'll try to get this in. We have Larry, who's local from Laguna Beach, and he says, can you help me out? I've been running into a bunch of people that have been angry, and I don't know what to do. I don't want to have to take it on, but I don't feel it would be great to beat them up and try to change them either. How do I dance with this?
Definitely dance. I wouldn't interject too much, and I wouldn't feed the anger, and I would try to stay as positive as possible around them. And if you don't want to hang with them, find a reason not to.
Yeah. All right. So what I'm going to tell you, Larry, is these people are being drawn into your life for a reason. So look at that. If you got a lot of people holding up anger, that's an opportunity. That's a reflection. It may be telling you something about you, that you are angry or that you're too passive or a multitude of other things. It's not mine to tell you, but it is an opportunity. Look in the mirror of this reflection and understand another aspect of this. Anger is predominantly a cover emotion. What I mean by that is, essentially, below anger, there's going to be grief. There's going to be sadness. There's going to be some kind of pain. So if you could see the people beyond the anger and into their hurt, it's going to help you navigate without personalizing it. Try that one on for size. If it works for you, groovy. And if it doesn't, write us. Call us. If you call us, we could talk to you in much, much more in depth about it. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, and we're going to be right back after this station ID. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. Welcome back. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman. And this evening, our guest is going to talk to us about tantric dating and whatever the heck that actually means. She is Catherine Ammon. She has worked in virtually every aspect of mental health, was the director of behavioral services at Glendale Memorial, very close to a lot of my family, and also at Redland Community Hospitals. But really, what I love in my experience of Catherine is she's truly an inspired, insightful author. Catherine, welcome to Inner Journey.
Thank you, Greg. Exciting to be here.
I'm going to start with the same old question I ask everybody. We have had so many different amazing people on. We've had authors and artists and shaman and medicine men, healers of and people of service in so many different walks. And to a person, there was a catalyst or a series of events that really thrust them on their path. True of you as well?
Absolutely. It's completely true of me. In fact, I see my whole life as an unfoldment of that. I came from, as I'm sure many of your listeners did, I came from a difficult childhood. Mm-hmm. And so it took a number of years to unravel that and undo some of the wounds from that. So I was in psychotherapy a lot. I was always on a quest. That led me into a spiritual quest as well. But through psychotherapy and healing some of those wounds from childhood, that's when I decided I wanted to sit in the other chair. I wanted to be the therapist. Mm-hmm. And went to school and studied that and made a career in mental health and psychotherapy. At the same time, my spiritual path was unfolding, and I was really looking into everything I could find, and certain things were helping more than others, and was drawn to certain things. And through certain spiritual experiences I had, I came to understanding of things that were all one. And, you know, I had a experience when I was in India where I was sitting by the river, and I just had an experience of absolute perfection. I'm sure a lot of people have had that, like maybe when they're out hiking or through psychedelics or through sex or some kind of experience where you just get that sense of everything being perfect. And that really made me want to spend my life contributing to this perfection instead of sitting around and being excited about my own melodrama or my own idiosyncrasies. I really wanted to become a person who gives. It just sort of started, I think people can understand that makes you just want to outpour.
You know, there's a lot of people that go through drama and trauma early in their lives, almost everybody, in all honesty. What was different about your path that made you say, okay, I have all this gook that I'm not sure how to deal with? What was the catalyst that made you seek out help?
I think I was just in so much pain that I kept going. And I had had this vision of who I could be and who other people can be. I was influenced heavily by a lot of the people in the 60s with human potential and with higher states of consciousness. And I wanted that. I wanted to taste that. I wanted to experience that in my life. And I had an adventurous soul, and I just wanted to go wherever that took me.
I understand. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to have more Catherine Ammon. And we're going to delve into what the word tantra means and what the phrase tantric dating actually is. You're listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman, and we'll be back after this.
She struts into the room. Well, I don't know her, but with a magnifying glance, I just sort of look her over. We have a drink or two. Well, maybe three. And then suddenly she starts telling me her life story.
Welcome back. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. And this evening, we have the extreme pleasure of being with an author, a healer, and just a sweet soul, Catherine Allman. Catherine, welcome back to Inner Journey.
Thanks, Greg. It's great to be here.
Okay. I'm going to just jump in. You know, I know that you don't approach mental health from, okay, this is just a mental issue and we need to deal with it. You really believe that there's a great deal of spirituality in mental health. Am I correct in that? And if so, can you illustrate what I'm talking about a little bit?
Well, mainstream mental health doesn't really involve spirituality, but I think that when you really get to what makes up a human being, the spiritual element is actually who we are and what we're made of. The mental health and the emotional health is just a part of a human being, and there's a higher principle at play. So I personally had a lot of spiritual experiences myself.
Mm-hmm.
Through meditation. I lived in India at an ashram for a year. I studied Tantra. I certainly experimented with psychedelic drugs, and all of these things exposed me to a greater reality. And so it was very hard for me to get into mental health and approach people with, mostly today, it's about taking psychotropic drugs and just getting people's symptoms medicated. But I think there's a search for something deeper, like what does life really mean and what are we really doing here? And so a lot of what's called mental health issues are really spiritual issues. Like people might be depressed because they don't find meaning in their life. What is the meaning in your life? How do you want to explain that? Or anxiety, worried about the future and not living in the present moment. So when you really think what makes up a human being, it seems obvious to me that there's a spiritual element as well.
And how do you see that exhibited? So if you're working with somebody and you don't want to just approach them in a standard mental health fashion, how do you include spirituality in your practice?
Most of the people that I work with are already on some kind of spiritual path. They're doing yoga or meditation in some way, so they usually have that kind of awareness. It comes from being able to see things from a higher, broader perspective. And being able to talk openly about meaning, and rather than just curing symptoms. Regular mental health is just about curing symptoms. We like to cure symptoms too, but we also like to expand consciousness.
And how do you incorporate that into the practice? So if I came to you and I had an issue that I wanted to deal with, how would you include the spiritual aspect in that?
Find out what your current beliefs are about a subject.
Mm-hmm.
That's. I would look at how you are viewing your current issue, and then perhaps offer a bigger perspective. For example, you might think that you are. I heard you doing it a little bit earlier, Greg. You might think that you are depressed because you lost your job, but then you'd say, well, maybe there's a reason that you lost your job.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's some greater purpose for you losing this job. Is there some spiritual reason that you've lost your job? You were talking with this gentleman about maybe there's some reason that he's attracting angry people. So I think a spiritual perspective is often offering people, there's nothing actually wrong with what's happening.
That is really important. Could you repeat that? Because that's something that people, I think, don't really grasp that well, and that's a gorgeous statement.
There's actually nothing wrong with what's happening. This is very exciting, and I learned this through my studies in Tantra. I lived in a Tantra ashram in India for a year. Mm-hmm. That sounds very sexy, and it actually was sexy, but it was more than that. It was a worldview. The tantric worldview, which most people don't understand, is that it's not so much that you need to do something to be spiritual, that you need to meditate or you need to be vegetarian or you need to do this or that. It's like everything is spiritual. Everything is happening exactly as it should. Everything's unfolding perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm upset in this moment and I'm not seeing things are perfect, then what about me needs to change so that I can see that it's perfect here. So if you're arguing with me and I don't like that you're angry, I can sit back, as Susan said, and see what my part in that is contributing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fact that we're having an argument might be just what either one of us needs to come to a greater understanding.
Yeah, and that's one of the, when I try to explain the idea, for me at least, and I'm really curious to see how you feel about this, it's never about good, bad, right, wrong. Instead, it's about light and shadow. And shadow isn't bad because it's shadow. It's just another opportunity. How can we employ it to our benefit or to somebody else's benefit?
Exactly. That's what we call the tantric perspective, is that light and dark, yin and yang, are all equally important.
Mm-hmm.
And we grew up in this Western culture where we're supposed to embrace the light, be happy all the time, and just dislike the dark or dislike pain. And pain can act sometimes be our greatest ally because it's our teacher. It's what's making us question and become more loving, better beings.
Yeah, I agree entirely. It's a silly analogy that I use, but if you're sitting on top of the stove and it's just the pilot light on, you may not move. But if that sucker gets turned up, I bet you're going to jump your booty off of there.
And you're going to learn not to sit on that same stove again.
Hopefully. Usually for me personally, I have to go back and sit on that stove at least half a dozen more times. A
couple of times.
Just to make sure. Because,
I know
that burned my tush, but how badly did it really
burn? Well, maybe by the fifth time it'll start feeling good. Yeah, I used to date that guy. I dated a few of those. So that's why I wrote this book, Tantric Dating, was for my experiences with this, trying to take this concept that I learned at the ashram, that everything's beautiful, everything's love, everything that's happening is right, into my disastrous dating life where I kept sitting on the stove over and over, falling in love with guys and assuming that if I just kept sitting on that stove, it was going to work out all right, and it never did.
And we have to take a break for Station ID. We'll be back with more Catherine Aumann and Tantric Dating on KX93.5 Inner Journey with Greg Friedman. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM. And this evening we are here with Catherine Aumann. And I got to tell you, the times in between while we're on little breaks are just as tantalizing as the times when we're on air.
We're having fun.
We are having fun. Here was the marching orders I got from Catherine during the break. Just have me talk about sex.
That was supposed to be private between you and me, Greg.
I did not know that. Okay, well, let's go back a little bit because I'm fascinated by this. Usually, people don't go, I'm just going off into India. We had, I'm going to blank on his name, but a really well-known man on this program who was responsible for bringing a sect of Buddhism to the United States. And he went to India after Kent State because he was one of those people that saw one of his friends get shot and killed at Kent State during the riots in the late 60s.
Wow.
What made you decide that this is time for me to go halfway across the world?
Yeah, I had always wanted to go to India, but what actually got me to go is that I had I was at a crossroads. I was sick of my corporate career. I was actually sick of my corporate career when it started, but it had gone on for quite too long. And I was in the middle of my life, and I didn't have the love of my life, and I didn't have the career I wanted to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And so a company and I, as they say, had mutual differences. And I got a severance, and I decided, you know, I didn't know what to do because I didn't know how to what kind of career to go into. And I thought, you know, if I were on my deathbed, where would I want to travel? Where would I be sorry I didn't travel? And I decided Kathmandu, India and Bali. So I set up a little trip, and I told my friends I'd be back in 6 weeks, and I was back 7 years later.
7 years?
Yeah.
Holy schmoly, girl.
So I went to India and I fell in love with this ashram, ended up living there a year, and went to the other two places, met my second husband there, and we moved. So that's how I got to India. I'd always been on a spiritual path, so I mean, I think that's a lot of people's destination, but it's a wonderful place.
Well, what I'm about to say doesn't compare with what you went through or went into. I was supposed to go to Florence in Italy for 2 days. I got there and I wound up staying 2 weeks.
There you go. But because
there it was, art was everywhere. The buildings were art. There was art on the buildings. There was art in the buildings. The people were art. And it just drew me into it. What drew you into that ashram that made you stay for the year?
Well, it was all the people there. It was a lot of expatriates. And everyone had come to this place. It was considered the world's largest personal growth center. So everyone who had come was adventurous enough to come to India on a spiritual path, affluent enough to be able to spend time in India, which you don't have to be that affluent, but and really wanted to work on their personal and spiritual growth. So even my father, who doesn't really understand very much, said, "Oh, I get it. You are around all people like you," which, as a lot of your listeners know, sometimes we feel like we're kind of strangers in strange land, those of us on these paths. So mm-hmm. It was just a little paradise.
That's amazing. And what is it? Because I'm ignorant. I'll tell you that straight up. We're supposed to go. I have a speaking gig in India late September, early
Lucky
October.
You.
Oh. Should be amazing. And we're going to teach a workshop there and do a couple of other things.
Jealous.
But I don't know what it's like to live in an ashram. What is that life like?
This ashram was very different than most because this was, as I said, a tantra ashram. So we were not sitting around quietly eating brown rice. We were interacting. There was meditation going on, but Osho teaches active meditations and a lot of interaction between men and women, all learning, all engaged in higher consciousness growth. And tantra there was seen as a way of relationship where you could work on yourself and become a more loving person through sex and relating.
And did you find that to be true? Because they have a thing that a lot of people don't know about around here. It's called polyamory. And you know, sometimes I find that to be very healthy, mm-hmm. and I find that to be rarer occasions than not. And a lot of times I find that as an excuse for people to not grow up and not grow and to avoid the intimacy that's in the dynamic of a one-on-one relationship. What was that like in an ashram?
Well, I'm actually not polyamorous myself. I think it's I'm certainly supportive if people want to try it. As a friend of mine said, he thinks polyamory means you just haven't met the one yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. This was more like people being more in a context of being friendly. I write in my book about spiritual brothers and sisters helping each other grow. It was kind of like that. We would come together, see what kind of intimacy was possible. If we weren't really able to become very intimate, we would see what kind of friendship was possible. Dating in the West, what I found when I came back here and was single and trying to go into the conventional dating world was if you and I met Greg for a coffee date and we sat down and we talked and we decided, well, I'm probably not going to marry him, then I throw you out and never see you again. This is what's considered contemporary dating culture. And I'd probably go home and say, geez, what a terrible date. I didn't meet anybody. But this thing that I espouse and what I learned at the ashram is, there's a myriad of types of relationships you and I could have.
Mm-hmm.
We could become best friends. We could be fishing buddies. We could go to raves together. We could, become stamp collectors together. There's just an endless number of types of relationships we have. So this whole contemporary dating idea of either we're going to live happily ever after or throw you in the garbage can just seems very cold and unloving to me.
Right. It seems very tunnel visioned. Now, look, just because you have an intention doesn't mean that you have an obligation. And what I mean by that is going. So I'm looking for my partner. Well, if that's not there, that doesn't mean that the scenery is not beautiful. I use the example of you and I decided to hop in the car and drive to Santa Barbara. Well, on the way, if we get distracted by going to Ojai, for example, or another little town, doesn't mean that the experience was lesser. It was just different than intended.
Sounds like you're already a tantric dater.
I ain't saying nothing, no way.
Well, that's exactly what I was talking about, is that people can open up. That's what I learned at the ashram and what I tried to distill into the strange dating practices I found here in Los Angeles, was that we can have a more fluid approach, a more loving approach. Mm-hmm. And while we can actually use dating as a spiritual practice to develop ourselves as more loving people. So if I sit with you, instead of looking for what's wrong with you on this date, which is what most contemporary dating is, he doesn't make enough money, he doesn't dress right, he doesn't do this, he didn't laugh at that joke, he's not cool enough for me. This is what contemporary dating is mostly made up of. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, instead we could sit here and say, I don't know the nature of this relationship, but I'm going to practice being as loving with you in this moment as I can and opening up to what beautiful energy there might be, even if I never see you again.
Well, and ultimately, isn't that saying I'm going to practice being as loving with me? Because I'm not going to just throw something out instead of recognize the value to me and the experience that's available.
I'm going to develop myself as a loving being in this moment. And that includes me, that includes this person, that includes everything around us. And so so in my experience, after dating pretty intensely for 4 years, I met the love of my life. And I believe that's because I was able to develop myself as a more loving person during that time by using dating as a spiritual practice.
What does dating intensely mean?
Oh, my gosh. I was just determined, Greg. I hired a coach, a dating coach, and mm-hmm. I went back to therapy to finish up some loose ends. And I went on 5 online dating sites, and I just started. I would meet 2 or 3 men a week, and then I would go out to my thing was to go to art gallery openings because I like creative people, and I would just we were talking during the break about being introverts. I would just make myself go up and talk to people I found interesting and just try to develop myself as a more loving person in the world in general and crack this dating code.
Okay, so you said 5 dating sites, about 3 dates a week. That sounds exhausting
to me.
Well,
it was my second full-time job. But I, like I said at the beginning in my little opening spiel, I just really want to find out what's possible in this life. I want to go for it. I want to master this area of life as well. I want to become as loving a person as I can.
And was it a tough job, or did you enjoy your second full-time job? No, because it could have gone either way. It could be this arduous thing that I hate doing, but darn it, I'm going to keep doing it. Or it could be a different experience. What was yours?
It was both of those things. At times, it was very heady, dating a couple of the guys a week and, you know, learning how to be flirtatious and have, you know, I think speed dating is really fun because you're just surrounded by all these men who are trying to show off for you and so on. And there were times I would be totally hopeless. This is going nowhere.
What is
not meeting anybody. I'm not going to meet anybody. I'm going to believe all the cultural BS about why I can't find someone. You know, just really just feeling like it wasn't going to work. And then I think it's anything you try to master, you come to these places where you think, I'm just not going to get this. And you just keep pushing on through and until you get what you're looking for.
Well, that's really important for our listeners because I think every single one of us at some point or another has run up against that place where you feel like you got knocked on your booty and you had the wind knocked out of you, and it hurts, and it's tiring, and you have to really sit down for a second and decide whether you're going to get up again.
Absolutely, and dating can often include what we call heartbreak or what we call rejection, and I think part of the process of becoming a conscious dater is realizing that heartbreak and rejection can be signs of everything being perfect too, because this person just wasn't right for this type of relationship that I was looking for. But that doesn't mean we have to not have a loving relationship together.
Absolutely. We have to take another short break. And when we do, We are going to be back with more Catherine Aumann and Inner Journey with Greg Friedman. Listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX 93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. As the man said, you are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX 93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. This evening, we are here with Catherine Aumann. Catherine, I've described you as a medical professional, as an author. How do you describe yourself? If somebody was to come up and ask you about your professional life.
I identify myself as a spiritual psychotherapist. And that's really important because a conventional psychotherapist is actually, they're not trained in spirituality. They're not actually, there's the statistics say that psychotherapists are actually less spiritual by profession than the average person.
Really? That's a new one to me.
Maybe not here in Southern California, but in general, in general, they are actually tend to be more atheist or not really interested in woo-woo. And I think it's important that I'm a licensed psychotherapist because a lot of spiritual healers aren't actually trained in how to deal with mental illness. So I think it's an important combination. So that's how I mostly describe myself. And also then I am coming out of the closet more with the tantrika part of my personality by writing this book about tantric dating. And I have a couple more books about my adventures in tantra. Because I think a spiritual view of sex, I think people are really ready for... I think a lot of people in their sex lives are realizing that there's a spiritual component. And it's one of the ways of experiencing altered realities of more love and more bliss and more joy.
What is transpersonal psychotherapy?
Transpersonal came about in the late 60s and 70s with Stan Grof and some of these people doing psychedelic research. And the human potential movement, and they came along and they said, well, there was regular Freud, and then there was Jung, and then there was the human potential movement, but what about the transpersonal or the spiritual dimension of the human? So what about Eastern religion ideas about psychology? What about indigenous people's wisdom about the psychology of a human being? What about what we're learning from the legal LSD experiences of the time? What about altered states of consciousness? What can all of these things teach us about who we as humans can be? So transpersonal psychology is the incorporation of this area of knowledge along with conventional psychology.
And what does that look like in application?
It may not look that different in terms of if you came in for a session with me, we would still be doing talk therapy. Mm-hmm. But the field that we're operating in is a much larger field in that it includes all of these other parts of knowledge that conventional psychology doesn't believe in or even want to look into.
And in including that, what do you find in being more expansive, if I were to paraphrase that? What do you reap? What is it that you get out of opening up to that kind of experiential inclusiveness?
Well, the aim of conventional psychology is to fit into society. And while that's an important skill to be able to fit into society, I don't believe that is as far as we want to go. And I'm not sure we want to fit into a society that perhaps is not the healthiest society. So I'm not sure that an end goal of fitting in and going about and paying your taxes and watching TV and not having any higher purpose is necessarily what we're here for. So a goal of transpersonal psychotherapy would be for a person to evolve as far as is possible, whether that means wanting goals beyond the conventional, becoming as loving as they can be, of becoming as insightful as they can be, of becoming understanding what's going on in the universe, whatever type of thing they want to expand into, that's what we would be supporting.
If I understand you correctly, and please let me know if I'm not, you're saying somebody comes into you and they say, I'm not normal. And your response to that is fantastic.
That might be good.
Right. Let's figure out how to make that not normal work to your benefit in the most gratifying way to you personally, not necessarily in the way that society dictates. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And you know, I do want to say that some people are in pain because they don't know how to fit into society. And we want to help them be able to. That's certainly a goal for some people, but for some people they fit in just fine and they're not finding any meaning in that, because many of us find that the conventional mainstream culture doesn't offer much in the way of meaning. So we are happy to address people finding their own truth about that.
We are coming close to the top of the hour, so let's do something a little bit out of the ordinary. Let's give you a shameless promotion plug.
I love that.
Your website is, first of all?
It's KatherineAhma.com.
Slow that puppet down.
Shall I go ahead and spell that?
Yes, please.
Okay, my name is spelled CATHERINEAUMAN.com. And on there, you'll find a little bio, some of our services. I've really been into making videos lately. So if you check out my videos, there's a link there to my YouTube channel. I'm like so excited. I've been studying all this, how to make videos on YouTube and so on. Taking direction from 20-year-olds on that. So it's very exciting. And you can sign up for my newsletter, which comes out monthly, which has all kinds of information, transpersonal and spiritual and sexuality and so forth.
Fantastic. One more time, the website is?
CATHERINEAUMAN.com, CATHERINEAUMAN.com. You can also connect with me there on Facebook.
And also, the book that we've been referring to, but we haven't just said it outright, is called?
Tantric Dating, Bringing Love and Awareness to the Dating Process.
And we will be back in the next hour with your calls. If you'd like to call in, the number here is 949-715-5936 and more. CATHERINE EAUMAN. And we're going to find out what the heck Tantra really means. Be back with more Inner Journey with Greg Friedman in just a bit.
Inner Journey, guiding you on an adventure of spiritual and personal growth. Helping you realize and make real the life of your choosing.
I just wanted to let you know that even though this was a difficult experience, I really learned a lot.
My name is Greg Friedman. I am a modern version of those that have existed in every culture. I am a guide. For years, I have taken people all over the world to work with indigenous elders in exotic locations. Only to show you that you are the magic. And we just help you realize it. It can be terrifying to look at our fears. And sometimes, even more so, to look at our strengths. I take you out into the wild, into the unknown, for an inner journey.
Welcome back. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. And this evening, we are here with CATHERINE EAUMAN. She has written a book called Tantric Dating and is a medical professional. And there are just so many different ways that you've decided to be of service. And I think that's a gorgeous thing. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
And you've decided that, at least my understanding is, here's the box. And I'm not going to throw the box out, but I'm not necessarily going to be confined by it. And I'm going to incorporate who I am into my practice in a way that a lot of people, I think, often feel inhibited to do. Is that fairly accurate?
That's pretty accurate. That's quite accurate. I spent the early part of my life in the closet about my spirituality. I was working in the mainstream world where that was not welcome. And certainly a lot of things have gone more mainstream since then. Yoga is now, you can talk about yoga, but back when I was early in working in healthcare, you were a weirdo if you did yoga, if you even thought about such strange things, or if meditation. These were like crazy things. So now they've gone mainstream, thank goodness. But I think along with these things mainstreaming, I felt like I wanted to come out and be open about being a spiritual therapist and talk openly more about spiritual sexuality.
I love that, and I can't wait to get in that. But can we take a few calls first?
That'd be great.
All right. Welcome to Inner Journey.
Thank you. Is it me?
It is you. Who is you?
Fantastic. Me? Depends upon who you ask. But right now, let's go with Swami Prasad. I've known Ms. CATHERINE there for about 15 years.
And?
And I just got done with a nice long hike, and I was really excited to share actually something her and I stumbled upon together. In November, we were out at Joshua Tree at an intimacy workshop, and I could go on and on and on with 16 zillion adjectives, But the big one I want to start off with is tenacity. And it really resonated with us and hit a chord in it. I think it sums her up very well, and I hope so far in the show you've picked up just how passionate she is and the wealth of passion and intensity and depth and breadth she brings to her work is fantastic. And so we were trying to, her and I were brainstorming, trying to come up with, what's a nice word to encapsulate how hard we work and how passionate we are about, you know, personal growth, spiritual growth, exploring the sexuality, exploring the psychology, exploring the tantra, exploring all the great stuff. And it's really the tenacity, just the fact that we were at this great workshop together, and this is, we're talking over four decades of study, and she's still studying and still practicing, and it's great to be able to share that. And she brings so much in the conversations and her and I conversations. I just love sharing the tenacity.
Oh, so. You're not getting away that easy. I got questions for you. Well, first of all, I want to thank Karen Lynn for her patience and waiting online. You are next in queue, I promise you. Tell me how her tenacious behavior showed up out in Joshua Tree. What is it that you saw that you not only recognized but appreciated?
Wow, good one. Let's start with the, well, two words, openness and humbleness. It was a workshop she'd done before, and the openness to say, you know what, let me dive back in and pick up new stuff, always keeping with the beginner's mind, right? And at the same time, exploring what's new. So how can I challenge myself again, right? And this being an intimacy workshop, it was really pushing the edge. So we were kind of experimenting, just how far could we push the edge and dive in? And have you guys talked yet about PG versus G versus PG-13? And
I don't think we're going to. Thank you.
I think you were just shut down.
I think so, yeah. Wouldn't be the first time. Probably wasn't the last time.
Love you, brother.
But yeah, I to stress the openness and exploration is really, really delightful.
But thank you, because that's something I think you and I as friends would both like to share with the people who are listening, which is that it's certainly at times, and Greg was bringing up this earlier, there's this tenacity. You must stick with it. Even when you think you're not going to get your goal, you're not going to get higher consciousness, you're not going to get more love, you just keep demanding of yourself and the world that you get the answer to that. And that you really stick with it, and that will pay. That pays off. Don't stop. Don't stop.
Yeah.
Happiness is possible. Don't stop.
Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you,
keep the courses. Yeah.
I am very glad that you listened in. I'm very glad that you called in. Something in particular that you pointed out, I really appreciate immensely. And it's, you called it tenacity, and I call it, you were talking about how Catherine's always studying. But to me, that's just an illustration of life. Because the truth is, it's always a process, and it doesn't matter, because we're continually in this to grow and to learn and to evolve. And what I'm hearing you say is that is beautifully reflected in Catherine's presence.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And in that life exploration you're talking about, the curiosity to remain, not sit back and say, oh, now I know something, I've arrived somewhere. No, let's keep exploring. Let's keep playing. Let's see what else is out there. Let's see what new goals can be set, what horizons can be crossed.
Yeah, my spiritual teacher, Osho, says we have until our very last breath to keep evolving.
Yeah, I don't know is so much more powerful than I know, because I know shuts off the event, the exploration, the adventure of it, whereas I don't know, I get to find out. And that's
so much
a beautiful
more fun.
Thing. Exactly.
It's easier. Okay. I know all of a sudden, you know, we're an authority and we got to, you know, be in a position. I don't know. We get to sit back and laugh and see what happens.
Absolutely. And thank you very much for calling into Inner Journey. We truly appreciate it.
Thanks, Prasad.
You're very welcome.
We are here with Catherine Aumann, and her book is called Tantric Dating. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman, and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman, and I believe we actually got Karen Lynn back. Is that correct, Karen Lynn?
It is correct. I'm back.
We are thrilled to have you back and apologize for the multiple times that we lost you, but now you be found. All right.
Hallelujah.
How may we help
Greg
you this
and
evening?
Catherine.
Hi, Karen
Lynn. Well, I wanted to call in and thank Catherine because she is truly one of the most insightful people I know, and she gives the most wonderful advice, and she's such a wonderful listener. I mean, she really listens with an ear to hear what the person who is talking to her is saying and not her trying to impose her own, you know, view on what she's hearing. So I just wanted you to know how grateful I am and how much I appreciate you.
Well, thank you.
That is incredibly sweet. Tell me an example of how working with Catherine has shifted your life, or you've shifted your own life, more accurately.
Well,
since we're talking about
dating,
what about that thing about, you would mind sharing that?
No, I'm happy to share that. Jeff's actually sitting here with me.
Oh, you're going to get points with Jeff. It's her boyfriend.
Okay. Talk to us.
Well, when I first met Jeff, he was fairly recently out of a relationship. And women are usually, especially once we're, you know, out of our 30s, given the advice, if somebody is recently out of a relationship, run. Don't, you know, they might get back together with that person. They've got a lot of work that they have to get done. It can be, you know, a bumpy ride. And, you know, I was telling Catherine about this really great guy who I met and who I really liked, but I was aware of that. And Catherine said, that's not necessarily a rule. People who, you know, have been in long-term relationships often are comfortable in relationships, and it's not going to be, you know, they're out free and sowing their wild oats and going crazy because they've just gotten out of a long relationship. Or, and she was 100% right, and I'm glad I talked to her, and I'm glad I listened to her.
That was 4 years ago, right?
Almost three and a half years ago, I think. So yeah,
good one.
Now that's an example of what Catherine and I were talking about earlier when we talked about not being right or wrong, because it's
exactly.
Easy to put, oh well, you know, I'm going to be the rebound girl, and that's wrong, into a category, mm-hmm. and then you're going to deprive yourself of that guy that's sitting by you on the couch right now.
Exactly.
Another time that conventional wisdom was wrong.
Exactly, yeah.
Karen Lynn.
So, yes.
Go ahead, please.
Oh, no, you were saying? I didn't mean to talk over you.
No, talk, please. That's why it's called a talk show. Talk.
Yes, that is 100% correct. That was, could I be the rebound person? But Catherine gave me other things to look at and to look for, you know, to, you know, see if that was the situation. And she's just unbelievably insightful and kind and patient. And I know one of the things that, you know, gives her a good feeling, or correct, Catherine, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but she really likes to see, you know, her people progress so that, you know, they don't, you know, have to stay for, you know, years and years and years. And, you know, she,
that's a sign of a great therapist, is that,
yes.
You know what? I want you to not see me.
There is life after therapy. Mm-hmm.
There is? Mm-hmm. Are you sure? Karen Lynn, what a pleasure speaking to you. And thank you very much for your patience and your tenacity as well, calling back and holding that whole time.
Thanks for your kind
words.
Well,
Catherine was worth it. So thank you very much for taking my call. And carry on. You guys sound great.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
First-time listener. Won't be a last-time listener.
We appreciate that immensely as well. Catherine.
Okay, have a great night. Bye.
You too. How do you feel about jumping right into another call?
I feel great about it.
All right. Up. You know what? And as I said that, once again,
We lost the fish.
I got a faulty line.
Let's go fishing.
All right, we're going to go straight there. Karina, you are on air on Inner Journey. Welcome.
Thank you, Greg. It's a pleasure to be on air. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Karina.
Hi.
Tell us why you're calling in this evening, if you would.
Well, I've known Catherine for about 9 years at this point, and I've worked with her pretty intimately in that time. And I have to say that they're really isn't anyone that I've ever met that is more effective and more transformative in their practice and being able to truly help people change their lives from top to bottom. And she's done that with me. And I just wanted to call in and express my gratitude and support and my thrill that, you know, she's got the opportunity to have this exposure on your show because, like I said, there really isn't anyone I've ever known. And I've met a lot of people in this transformative personal growth work. And I just think so very highly of her. So I'm thrilled to be able to share that on your show.
Karina, how has working with her changed your life?
Sure. So I would say it was interesting. It's been profound, but one of the most important effects that she's had is she's helping me to move from the wrong idea that life and even personal growth are a self-focused practice, and to speak to what you were referring to earlier, that life, and when it's really used to its greatest effect, is that of being in service of others or service to others. And that's not something that I was familiar with. And of course, you know, the conventional ideas that I've encountered in terms of spirituality and psychotherapy and don't always speak to the idea that transformation has to do with how you use your life for the benefit of others. It really is like kind of dig into your psychology, dig into what you need, you know, and that paradigm shift in terms of moving one's attention to how we can use our lives to be of benefit to other people has been tremendous.
Wow, thanks so much. I really appreciate that you take the time to call in. Thank you, Karina.
Can you expound on what Karina's saying a little bit?
Yes, I believe that, as Karina is saying, we get to a level of good functioning in ourselves for the purpose of helping others. Otherwise, it's just more expanding our own egos, kind of polishing the apple. And the apple is polished now. Let's use it to feed other people. Let's plant some seeds. Let's cut the apple up and share it with other people, because otherwise I'm just continuing. You know, you see this in the extreme examples of someone who becomes rich and then has to become richer and richer and richer and richer to the point of obscenity. And what a wonderful thing when we see people who achieve wealth and then use it to help other people, buy shoes for kids, or as you guys are doing, build wells for people who need to drink. This is where happiness lies. Happiness isn't continuing to consume entertainment. It's figuring out ways that you can share what you've gained in your life with other people. That's where happiness lies, being of service.
And Karina, did you find your happiness in being of service?
I certainly did. I can say that my family very much has the pattern that Catherine was talking about, which is, you know, they've become very successful in the world professionally, and that was certainly an objective that was taught to me: become wealthy, become successful, care about what the world thinks of you. But they didn't really, and don't still have much of an understanding of using what they have gained or we have gained to help others. So it was a revelation to me, because it really took my life from a very self-focused, and I would say, for lack of a better word, it sounds dramatic, but it's really true, kind of a misery-based life where, you know, life was very much experienced that way, sort of punctuated by momentary pleasure that was all about self-gratification. And now being on a journey with Catherine's assistance, where that's not the experience at all, and it hasn't been for quite a long time, where the work that I do is deeply satisfying, and I'm continuing the opportunity to grow myself in order to be of service to others, it's the richest and most rewarding opportunity that I can see life has to offer so far for me.
Yes, and I just want to say that Karina is really an example of a person who has learned by really delving into work and being assistance to other people, that quite to her surprise, as I predicted for her, quite to her surprise, one day she woke up and realized, oh my gosh, I've become happy. Because you lose yourself in your work, and you lose your self-focus, and you lose your attention on it's too hot in here, it's too cold in here, it's too this, I'm not getting enough of that. And you've lost yourself in assisting others, and you go, oh my gosh, what happened? I'm a happy person.
Karina, you truly seem like a wealthy person, and thank you for sharing some of your wealth with us this evening.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. It's a real pleasure.
Absolutely. You know, there's this book that we've been teasing, talking about for, an hour and a half or so. We have to take a short break. But I swear that when we come back, we're going to talk about tantric dating with Catherine Allman and Inner Journey with Greg Friedman. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX 93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach. I don't care how much you flap your arms and kick your feet, if you are still holding on to the side of the pool, you ain't swimming.
One, two, three. condemn, I don't convert. This is the calling, have you heard? Bring all the lovers to the fold. No one is gonna lose their soul. All my days I've been searching to find out what this life is worth. Through the books I've looked, through time I've searched. Love is my religion. Love is my religion. Love is my religion. All we need is love. So don't let nobody stop us. Free spirits have to soar. With you I share the gift, the gift that we now know. I don't want to fight. Hey, let's go fly a kite. There's nothing we can't cure. I keep you in my arms for sure. Oh, love is my religion. Love is my religion. Love is my religion. All we need is love. 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 All we need is love.
That was Ziggy Marley singing Love is My Religion, and ain't that the truth? We are here on Inner Journey with Greg Friedman, and our guest this evening is Catherine Aumann. Catherine, welcome back.
It's good to be back.
You know, we talked about your book, Tantric Dating. Well, we actually talked around your book, more accurately. Let's begin with some simple definitions, if we could. What is Tantra?
Tantra is mostly known in the West as sex or some kind of, you know, it's usually in the back of magazines, tantric this or that. And Tantra originally was a spiritual path that included sex, unlike almost all the others. So most of us grew up with our religions and spirituality where sex was somehow bad, and we weren't supposed to do that. And parents didn't do that, and we weren't supposed to do it. And Tantra has always been a tradition where nothing's bad. Everything is grist for the mill. Everything is something we can learn from. Everything is holy, including sex.
So I'm going to just go to the place where a lot of listeners go. I understand what you're saying. But a lot of listeners are going to go, really, everything is holy. What about murder and rape and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, all these things that are really, you know, by normal, air quotation mark, standards, hideous and horrible?
Well, they are hideous and horrible to my point of view as well. But I believe that there's a higher, I have experienced that there's a higher intelligence, a higher consciousness in the universe, that somehow all that stuff has its place. I personally think it's horrible and should be wiped out, but I am not the architect of the universe. So I just...
That's not you?
Don't blame me. But I've had spiritual experiences where I somehow understand that even those things somehow are teaching us, evolving us, growing us as spirits. And I can't say that I fully understand it as a limited being, but I trust that knowing.
Yeah, I would say the way I talk about it is we as humans often are much too close to the mirror to have any perspective.
Beautiful.
And everything is an opportunity, whether we can recognize how to avail ourselves of that opportunity or not. Now, you talk about a definition of love. What is love to you?
Well, what I came to learn is that, this is called tantric dating because it has to do with my adventures in the dating world. And I found that unlike my spiritual experiences, the dating world, love is always something that's in the future. I'm going to find this love someday. Or I'm still sad about a love in the past. So there's always this sense of love is somewhere else other than where I am. I can't find love. So daters are often chronically for years looking for love. And they may have a series of difficult relationships and are still looking for love, which is somewhere else other than here. And my experiences with Tantra and with spirituality are that in this present moment, love is here. If I get really quiet and I'm not thinking about the past or longing for the future, love is here in this moment perfectly. And if I can't see that, then I need to clean my glasses and be able to experience the love that's in this moment, this perfect love. If everything is for my benefit, then love is also perfectly here in this moment. So if I am meeting someone, love is possible with that person. Maybe not romantic love, maybe not sexual love, maybe not the perfect love, but some type of love is here in this moment. But as daters and as human beings, we're always thinking that love is not here right now.
It's interesting because you said all of that, and you also said love is possible. Is it that love is possible or love is present? And I'm not trying to be pedantic about this.
Actually, that's a great point. I think both are true because love is present. It's only possible if I'm open to it. And I might be close to it. I might decide that I don't like your T-shirt, so therefore you're the kind of person I don't love. Or I might decide you're a Jew or an Arab or a something that is on my list of people not to love, or Republican, or old, or whatever my list is. So it's me deciding that love is not possible in this moment, not the actuality of the fact that it is present.
Love that. Tell us about what inspired you to write this book.
What inspired me to write this book was the disconnect between myself as a spiritual being and going out and, like everybody else, trying to find love somewhere other than the present moment. So I was dating. As I talked about earlier on the show, I really went into the conventional world, online dating, speed dating, going out to events to meet, trying to find my perfect love somewhere in the future, and reconciling that over a couple of years with my spiritual understanding that love is present, and coming to a conclusion, finding my own perfect love and my own perfect love in this moment. I wrote this book to try to help other people do the same.
So on one hand, you have going out on multiple dates a week, going to speed dating, being on 5 different dating sites.
That's right.
And not really being gratified by the entire process. And on the other hand,
you have this guy sitting to your right that's been looking at you adoringly all evening. So you have listeners right now going, oh, well, it's here and it's here. How do I bridge the gap? Because I would say more people were in your original camp than are in your present camp. How do you get from that place to where you are right here,
well,
right
I
now?
Well, I would recommend first that you buy my book. Well, I'm just kidding.
Subtle, very subtle. I like it.
What I outline in is that dating, rather than a process of no, you know, swipe left, rather we see this as dating is, and this is what I came to during those 4 years, is that dating can be a process of spiritually developing myself as a more loving person. Because if I get into the frequency of understanding that love is always here, then I can see the love that's right in front of me. We've all heard stories of people who felt like they weren't attracted to somebody and then fell in love with them later because their perfect love was sitting right in front of them. And unless I can wipe my glasses clean so I can see the love that is present, I'm not going to find love. And when I was able to clean my glasses sufficiently, develop myself, open my own heart, love was there.
And are there exercises, tools? Is there something that you, I mean, yes, go out and buy her book. Absolutely. But is there something, if somebody's listening right now, is there an accessible, ingestible, applicable tool
Absolutely.
That you could offer?
Let me share one of the exercises. I have several exercises in this book. And one of them, I talk about just going to Starbucks. And as a single person, we're usually going to Starbucks to see who's hot. You know, I'm sure there's nobody who's not hasn't enjoyed that on occasion. So we go in and we look with this eye of who's hot and who's not. And this is actually, if you really sit down with yourself, this is very unloving. Mm-hmm. It's very conventional who's hot and who isn't, because sometimes the hottest people don't look like the hottest people, and vice versa. And so I suggest people go to Starbucks with a different eye. And instead of assessing for who's hot and who's not, assessing who probably goes home and is the coach of a Little League game. Who probably is the person who really takes care of their cat? Who is the person who seems like they really are a loving friend? And so instead we look for evidence of love, because looking for who's hot is not looking for evidences of the love that is always present.
Now, flip-flop it, if you don't mind. If it was masculine towards feminine, what would you suggest the man looks for in a woman?
I think it's exactly the same. As 70%, according to Dr. John Gottman, 70% of people in successful relationships, they actually do studies on this sort of thing, say that the friendship is the most important thing, which is shocking, because in dating, we're told that the friend zone is the place you don't want to be. But in actuality, successful relationships, it's about friendship. That's both men and women. So I suggest people be looking for, it's enjoyable to look for who's attractive to us, but we also look for who could be my best friend that I would like to hang out with for hours and hours in and out of bed.
Okay, so say it's me, or because I hear this all the time from women. You know, he's such a nice guy. He'd be perfect for me, but I'm not attracted to him. What do they do about that?
Well, I think that the response to that, if someone says that to you, I think their response is, that's great. Friendship is the basis of any relationship. So we're really on the right track because we're developing our friendship first. And so not to be afraid of being in the friend zone, but to actually see it as an accomplishment that's moving in the right direction.
If I hear you correctly, you're saying don't make it into anything, but don't discount it as well. Is that accurate?
Well, usually when people say I'm not attracted, that can change in an instant. I heard a story the other day about someone who felt she wasn't attracted to a guy. And then he stopped the car, picked up a dog that had been hit and run, took it to the vet, paid for it to get fixed, drove it back to the owner, and guess what? She suddenly found him attractive because he was such a kind, decent human being. So this whole idea of being really frightened that someone's not attracted to you, I think we need to have patience and just say, that can change.
That's interesting. So it's not saying make it into this has to be romantic, but it's also saying be available.
Be available. Develop a friendship over time. In the conventional dating world, we're supposed to know immediately if this is Prince Charming or Scarlett Johansson or not for guys. So we're supposed to know immediately if this should be our lifelong, you know, it's the Hollywood meet. I know immediately if this should be my true beloved. And actually, real love is a deeply beautiful sexual friendship.
And I got to tell you, there's an old Buddhist saying that I will butcher like nobody's business. It says essentially, if you meet somebody and your heart races and your pulse is going and you sweat and you feel all of these endorphins going, not that the Buddha said that exactly, then that's definitely not the one for you.
Well, that's been said. That could be your worst nightmare. I wrote an article once called That's Your Worst Nightmare, because often the person we think we have the most chemistry with reminds us of something from our childhood, some unfinished business. An example of this is someone who got beat up in childhood may feel chemistry with someone who's abusive. The person doesn't appear that way at first, but then these patterns come up for us to heal ourselves. But certainly we can heal ourselves by not choosing relationships that are abusive as well. So chemistry isn't always something that could be trusted.
And your book is called?
Tantric Dating, Bringing Love and Awareness to the Dating Process.
And if you wanted our listeners to know one thing that they could gain from reading your book, what would that one thing be?
Well, love is not hard to find. Love is present in this moment. We are fish swimming in the water and we can't see the water. And the way we're going about dating is the problem, not the other person or ourselves. Usually when dating isn't going well, we go, something's wrong with me or something's wrong with these people. I'm not meeting the right people. We are meeting the right people in this moment for us to practice love with. And by becoming more loving people, we can attract perfect love.
By becoming more, so how do we become more loving people?
We practice the discipline of love in each moment. So if I meet you on a coffee date and I think, I don't know if this is going to be possible or not, I still, in this moment, develop my ability to find out what's right with you, what's lovable about you. Instead of focusing on, I don't like your t-shirt, I focus on, what kind of charity work do you do? Who's important to you in your life? I focus on what is our common humanity, what love can we share in this moment, even if we never see each other again. And then instead of dating being a series of, here's what I can't stand about everybody, it becomes these loving encounters that share more love in the world and make me become a more loving person.
Now, I'm going to tell a little tale out of school.
Great.
I've said that this man that's sitting to your right has been looking at you adoringly. That's partially true. It's not completely true. I always say in a long-term relationship, love is going to come and go. Like is going to come and go. In love is going to come and go. Lust is going to come and go. But the only thing that cannot come and go is respect. And this man sitting to your right has been looking at you with such great admiration and respect throughout the entire evening. How did you shift to welcome him into your life in that manner?
I actually did what I am sharing with others, is that I shifted from having my list of who I was looking for, which no mortal person could have ever been, and I became willing to find love wherever it showed up. And when I was willing to let go of that list of who I thought he had to be, if I was willing not to have that, it's a miracle. He showed up with everything I ever wanted. You know, one of my teachers was Robert Kiyosaki, the guy who wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad way back when, and he was teaching about business, and he said, the only way you can have a successful business is that you build your business, and then at the last moment, you have to be willing not to have it for it to happen. And I found that to be great advice in life, because I was willing not to get this perfect person just to be able to be loving and share more love. And when I was able to let go of that, then he showed up.
Yeah.
We cling to these social ideas of who this Prince Charming needs to be, and that gets in our way. Sorry, I interrupted you. I'm so excited.
I love it. It's great. Yeah. The illustration I use for that is trying to grip water. It's going to just squish through your hands. But if you just hold a cup, it's going to be this beautiful container that can really hold and nourish you and quench your own thirst.
Beautiful. Because most of dating is just clenching so deeply, so strongly to this illusionary love in the future.
We are going to take a short break. But before we do, Catherine, if people want to find out about you, how would they go about doing that?
Go to my website, which is www.CatherineAumann.com, CatherineAumann.com. Or find me on Facebook. I'd love to connect with you there.
And your book is called?
Tantric Dating, Bringing Love and Awareness to the Dating Process.
Get it. We'll talk on the other side of the break. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman on KX 93.5 FM, community-supported radio in Laguna Beach, California. Welcome back. You are listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman. And during the break, I put Catherine on the spot a little bit. And I do apologize. It was not intentional. But we are at that place where we have come to the last question of the evening. Is there anything that you'd feel remiss? Is there anything you'd like to share with the audience before we leave?
I want to repeat this again. I just feel so strongly. I lived so much of my life feeling that there wasn't enough love. I shared that I had a difficult family. I had difficult relationships. I just always felt like I was looking for love and couldn't find it. And through spiritual experiences, through the dating process, through studying Tantra, I found that love is everywhere. We are fishes in water. We just can't see it. And it's worth staying tenacious and strong and until you can get to that place where you realize, just like Ziggy was singing, love, it can be our religion. Love is everywhere. And to practice love in this moment with this person you're with, whoever it is, it's a beautiful thing. It helps us grow. It helps have more love in the world. I think we have a love problem. If we can recognize that we can love this person in front of us right now, that's all it takes.
That is absolutely beautiful. And like the Swami said, awfully humble. So do me a favor, be a little less humble, give me a shameless promotion plug, talk to me about your book, let the listeners know how they can get a hold of it, and also your website one more time, please.
My book is Tantric Dating, Bringing Love and Awareness to the Dating Process. This outlines my suggestions, my journey, some exercises for you as listeners to bring more love into your life, more awareness, more spiritual principles into the dating process. I'm at www.CatherineAumann.com, CatherineAumann. That's how you spell my name. And I'd love
I
it
hate
you...
when I forget to spell my own name.
I'd love it if you'd connect with me on Facebook.
Absolutely beautiful. CatherineAumann.com. The book is called Tantric Dating, and you can get it almost anywhere, but check it out. It's a easy but poignant read. I really strongly suggest it. I say this every week. If you got more questions and we haven't been able to get to you, please always feel free to call at 949-715-5936. Or if you don't feel comfortable doing that, please feel free to email us at greg@gregfriedman.com. There are so many people that work their tushies off behind the scene to be able to put this show on for you. For them, I am hugely grateful. But I'll tell you this. You, the listening audience, without you, this show does not exist. So I am grateful beyond words for you. You have been listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman. Good night.
I am Subonku Somei, and you have been listening to Inner Journey with Greg Friedman.